Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to the 156th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Amanda O'Connor. I'm Madden Lowe.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we have Sam Zwiebelman. He's the co-creator and director of Pen 15, the Hulu show that is a smash hit.
Yeah, it's a phenomenon. Pen 15, for the uninitiated, is a show where Anna Conkel and Maya Erskine, they are women in their 30s, but they are playing 13-year-olds in middle school. And every other character, every other actor is actually, in fact, a child, basically. So it's totally hilarious. It's totally off the wall. They're pretty incredible. They're kind of chameleons and do an incredibly convincing job of being 13-year-olds, but they're still adult women with all of their adult perspectives.
And speaking of adult women, when Sam came in here and I told my wife that he directed Pen 15, she got giddy with excitement because her and her friends love that show so much.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's exciting.
A thing. Yeah.
My favorite part of the interview is that we really hear about how Sam, unlike Matt or myself, really only works on things that he absolutely loves.
Absolutely loves. You know, it's a trend that, Sarah Dina Smith kind of had a similar takeaway. And I think it's a thing worth taking to heart. Sam really goes in deep about his process, how he comes to a project, how he cultivates projects, but he's very picky about what he likes to do. And so we talk about the ramifications of that and the upsides, the downsides, what that means to him in a real world scenario. So it's a great one. Sam's an old pal. It's really special to have him on the show, especially when Ben 15 is exploding like this. I should mention at the top of the show, the cinematographer behind the show is a previous guest, Andy Rudzewski, Andy Riz, who's shot with both of us. We talk about him a lot in this episode. We will have a link to his episode in the show notes as well.
Yeah, in general, I think we get pretty deep into like how to direct also, even though that's not like the primary focus of the conversation. And I think whether you're super technical or super artsy or in between, I think you'll really get a lot out of this conversation. So I'm excited for you to hear it.
Yeah.
I mean, recently people seem to really be liking our show. Matt and I have been getting texts from people we know saying they're enjoying the interviews. So it makes us feel good. So if you are liking any specific episode, feel free to email us or contact us or tweet at us because, you know, it really helps us steer the show.
Or even better, drop us a review on iTunes.
Hey, speaking of reviews on iTunes, we got a new one. Bailey Studying Abroad says, "So glad I found this podcast. It's a perfect balance of commercial and narrative-based knowledge and experiences. I've been trying to find my go-to film podcast for a while, and now you guys are it. Thanks for all your work."
Hey, thanks, Bailey. If you're listening, Bailey, and you want some free Just Shoot It stickers, shoot me a message on Twitter or email me, and I'll mail you some. And that goes for anyone else who is posting a review. Just shoot us an email at justshootitpod. I'll send you a few stickers as a nice thank you, because I've got a bunch of them. That's the sort of commitment I have and how badly my wife wants these stickers out of our apartment.
We have so much to talk about personally, but I think Matt and I are going to do an episode just about that because we have so much amazing stuff from Sam Zwiebelman.
But before we talk to Sam, I think it's worth reminding everyone that we have a Patreon page, patreon.com/justshootitpod. If you want to support the show, throw us a couple bucks. A buck a month means a quarter an episode. Surely the show is worth that much to you. Maybe it's worth $4. Maybe it's worth 20. We're working on some very cool swag coming down the line. Patreon is the way to be the most plugged into our community, and also shows your support in a financial way, which is a pretty big deal for us. It keeps the show afloat. We're investing a lot in the show lately, and it's thanks to the Patreon. So if you want to help pay Jay, our editor, she's been editing every single episode for kind of a while now. We're investing more in outreach for the show, a little bit of marketing, all of that hosting, all of that stuff adds up. And honestly, the Patreon has given us the freedom to experiment in ways that are really exciting and are making the show even better.
So thanks.
Well, without further delay, let's hop into our conversation with Sam Zwiebelman, Pen 15. So Sammy Zwiebelman, welcome to the show. Mm.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
Old pal, right?
Yeah.
So, Sam, you, most notably right now, you're the co-creator and director of four episodes of Pen 15. But before that, yeah, what's your resume? Give us the IMDb. Pen 15,
well, this is the first show that I co-created, and it's the first show that people have seen. I've done plenty of work that no one has seen.
That is my follow-up question, for real.
You're in good company.
And no one will ever see. And, you know...
So you did the show Take My Wife for CISO.
I did a show called Take My Wife, which is a half-hour comedy drama for CISO. It now lives on Stars because CISO went down.
Oh, that's cool.
Congratulations. We have Go 90 shows. No one knows what happened to those shows.
Yeah.
Wait, CISO is NBC's digital platform?
Right. That's right. Very low budget, very challenging, but it was my first big sandbox for me.
Right.
It's kind of like a cool,
so it's about a married couple of women stand-up comedians. I feel like it's, and it was a few years ago, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like kind of one of the shows that was paved the way for kind of the type of shows that we are seeing today that are just like,
well, there are a lot of stand-up shows.
Well, not just the stand-ups, but like kind of the interesting like gender and orientation.
It's
like
post-Louis, pre-crashing.
Yeah.
My wife, right?
That's exactly right. That's where it'll fit on the history books.
Well, I'll say this, though. I got the Emmy screener for Take My Wife, and it's like a little like pop-up book.
Well, I think they spent more money on that pop-up book than they did on the show.
When I saw it, I was like, oh, I bet he's pissed.
It's like, who could have used some of this pop-up money?
Yeah, all this shipping alone.
Andy Rizutsky shot that with me as well.
Oh, that's cool.
To be fair, though, you do a great job of stretching that dollar, so you can't tell that it is
I want to meet someone that does not do a great job of stretching the dollar. Do you think there are people?
Yeah, definitely. I know, because I work with Andy enough, I have a sense of like what you guys didn't have on those shows. Because you'll be like, oh boy, I'm so glad I have this on my commercial for Miller Lite or whatever we're doing. You can't tell, I guess, is what I'm getting down to.
Well, it does create a set of rules that you can then be creative within.
For instance.
It just makes you...
For instance, what do you... Yeah.
I'm trying to think of something specific, but
maybe you have like a limited set and you have to shoot it in a creative way or something.
Like certainly, you know, you're not going to see any cranes. Mm-hmm. We're in tight, real locations. So, you know, there's not a ton you can do with wide shots.
It's just an overall approach to things, right? You're throwing things out before you even...
You don't even allow yourself to imagine
what
a bigger scope would be.
Right.
But, you know... I guess that's all I was used to up until then. So it feels very natural. Mm-hmm. Like it's okay.
Right.
I just wish it weren't so stressful. And you're working people hard.
Yeah.
And you're taking people like Andy or people you've worked with and asking them to break their asses again for you. Yeah.
But you're working on something that you feel is good.
But you have passion. So yeah, you know, I care, you know. I want to be... you know, cracking the whip if I didn't believe in it.
Which is what is something that Matt and I were talking with you about before we started recording, which is like if you choose a project that you're like super stoked about and passionate about and everything, it's like, it's not that you can pay people less or whatever, but you can kind of be a team making like something that people will like, as opposed to everyone knowing the script's not that great or the talent's not that great, or, you know, in commercial world, like the client is not letting us do all these cool things for legal reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. You hope that that's infectious. And if you believe in one another and you know that you're going to have other work together, mm-hmm. and you know, you're going to want to prove yourself in the trenches together, then you're going to show up. Or if you've let them down and aren't doing that, then they can smell that too. Mm-hmm. Like if Andy felt like I was phoning it in, mm-hmm. that would give him and his crew a sense that they sure. can phone it in.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Are you carrying a lot of your crew members over from project to project?
Yes. Some department heads for sure. You know, you've gone to hell with them, mm-hmm. and you've come out the other side, like Andy many, many times over. Done so much with him, and mm-hmm. will continue because he keeps doing amazing work and having yeah. such a positive attitude.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that maybe, not just to kiss Andy's butt, but like in general, crew members.
He deserves it.
Sure, fair enough. but, you know, attitude goes a long way, basically, is what mm-hmm. it comes down mm-hmm. to. And so when you find people that you gel with creatively who also, you know, engender the same sort of spirit, then you can accomplish incredible things.
Yeah, you hold on to dear life for those people. You show up for those people because they're going to need help too. You know, like let's say you believe in someone and they have, and you want to work with them for your whole life, or you can just sense that, which I have over my short career, and they have like a script that they want you to read or something, you're going to make sure you're bringing it just as hard mm-hmm. and giving feedback and helping them. Mm-hmm. Because they've done it for you, or you're going to want it from them. And it's just going to be a lifetime of that, hopefully. Yeah.
I'm curious, have you guys ever worked on something where you don't love the script? I mean, I know you have, Matt. Have
yeah,
you?
Oh my God, so many times.
I don't think I ever have. Not in the directing role. I am very picky, and sometimes that sometimes
there's
that makes
a lot
it hard.
Of spirited debate.
There's got to be either I love the script or I love the people involved.
Have you ever taken a job for a paycheck?
I took a writing job for a paycheck. Mm-hmm. I took a studio feature film writing job.
Oh, I don't think I knew this. Did you tell me?
No, yeah. I had it was a kind of a studio comedy mm-hmm. That I just... It was a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. It was like a real paycheck, mm-hmm. a studio job, an opportunity to prove myself in that space. And I write, so it was like an opportunity to grow that. But it was not totally the right fit for where I was at creatively. Mm-hmm. And it was a totally fine experience, but I don't think I want to do that again.
How did you get that job? They'd read your specs?
It was a spec script, and then they were like, oh, this is great, we don't want to do your movie, but can you do that to our movie? Mm-hmm. and so you pitch on it, and then I don't know how I got the job. I faked my way through it. I was like, yeah, I think it'll be something like this, and they're like, great, we want you to do it. And I was like, what? Like, no, oh, no, don't hire me. I don't know right. what I'm doing. Right. Yeah. And I did it. And but as far as directing, I don't think I've done something that I didn't really love.
Yeah.
That's
so
I don't think
so
I could.
Crazy to me.
But I've been very poor.
You don't do commercials? You don't do...
No.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I want to get back to this very poor thing, because I think
yes,
that is interesting.
Let's talk about that.
Right. because...
I'm very poor.
I think that it is... easy.
But not anymore. I mean, there's billboards for your shows at LAX.
That's where the money is. I'm desperately drinking your wine right now, sure. Just guzzling.
Is that why you
chocolate.
Asked me if you could shower here after the podcast?
Yo, you got an Airbnb back there? Airbnb back there?
You didn't cool. even eat any of the chocolate. Just have one piece. It's pretty good.
I'm going to have that much chocolate. So we've known each other for a long time. You're very selective. And sometimes people don't talk about, like, having financial support, right? Even on the show sometimes, you know, we have a hunch maybe that somebody is
got hooked up by their uncle or something.
Yeah, yeah, somebody's got a rich uncle or something. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, like, everybody gets dealt a different hand, and like if you know someone who's wealthy and can kind of support you or finance your first film or whatever, go do it, right? Like, awesome, right? Like, no one begrudges you. The only thing that I would begrudge is, like, not seizing those opportunities, not taking advantage of it. You know, we went to school with David Ellison, right? Like, one of the richest people in the world, but it's fine because he's Ellison's making...
Son?
Larry Ellison's son, yeah. And he's making...
He's Fallout. A filmmaker?
Well, he's a producer.
Yeah. Okay.
But he owns Skydance. He founded Skydance, right? So, like, all of the Mission Impossible movies, for instance, are him. Like, he's in cahoots with Bad Robot. So, like, he could have just, like, coasted for the rest of his life, but he's making the movies that he loves. Great. Awesome. But I think sometimes money is such a integral part of survival and filmmaking. You can't just, like, make movies alone in your room the way we wish we could. Do you know what I mean? If writing the script was the final thing, then great, that would be incredible. But that's not really the case for all of us. And I think you're such a fascinating person because you've made real sacrifices, right? You've been broke before, but it paid off. Do you know what I mean? Now you've got billboards for the show that you created.
Yeah, all over Los Angeles. I think about it. It feels surreal because I spent my entire adult life not going out because I couldn't afford to get a drink with my friends. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they are nice, so they'll say, well, we'll get you a beer. But there's only so many times you can do that before feeling
like... You are
like
a good hang, as they say.
Like, you don't, like, I don't want to do that. And you feel guilty every time you go out for dinner, and you can't go on trips that people are going on, so there are social sacrifices, and just, you know, using the same phone till it dies, the same computer till mm-hmm. it dies. So it's either insanity, let's leave it at that. I think it's insanity.
No,
but it happened to work out.
Maybe it's integrity is maybe another word for
it, right? Gosh. I'm not like against a paycheck job. I, by any means at all, because there's just no, it's not romantic to have a lemon in your fridge, you know, like capital R romantic and like some sriracha that you're trying to get out, you know, I just, when it comes to
doing that diet, the lemon?
It's called the integrity diet. I think I worship filmmaking a little too much to the point where I can't do something unless I can totally see it or think I can do a really great job to it. Mm-hmm. I just want to know how to do, some projects I wouldn't even know how to do. Mm-hmm. Unless I really got it and I really felt like it could be awesome. Mm-hmm. So every project I've picked, it's because I felt like it had great potential. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I could add something.
This is a weird question to ask this deep into the interview, but is your main thing directing? Is that like when you say pick a project, you're talking about directing?
I write, but I think my passion is for the, putting together of a film, like
the making
of the editing, the mise-en-scène, for lack of a less douchey term,
show running, kind of
just, you know, the sculpture of it is what has always excited me the most. But I come from writing, and writing is all involved in directing just as much, but I get really excited about the filmmaking side the most.
Yeah. I mean, there's a rush to just being on set and like collaborating with people and like watching a call kind of come together.
Yeah. Like solving something in an edit is fun too, or getting that location that you,
love shooting or prep. I like when it starts to work in the post.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I'm like, it
worked. Okay. Yeah.
I'm like, that is the sequence is fucking working, you know, it's like moving and it's like makes you feel something, but all the stuff leading up to that is so stressful.
There is sometimes you'll get the sleepless night where you wake up and you're like, is that gonna cut? Is that gonna work? You know,
the good thing about directing on a show that you
were a creator on is no one's over your shoulder. No mm-hmm. one's telling you that's not what our show is. So I could mm-hmm. do whatever I want, whatever I wanted. However, there's a lot of pressure to that.
But like, you have your co-creators also, right?
Yeah, but they're the actors. So they're mm-hmm. not really seeing what I'm doing.
They're not on the monitor.
Not necessarily. They want to know.
From like a technical a point, like a
yeah,
camera.
Like the approach to the scene. For example, we had this scene at the end of the season where a group of these 13-year-olds are taking photos. They're getting ready to go to a school dance. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do it from the point of view of one of the parents' video cameras? So mm-hmm. it's all like a VHS. Mm-hmm. And it's not written like that in the script. It's just, you know, it's
just a scene.
A scene where you're getting ready. But this was my approach. And I was like, oh my God, like what if this doesn't work at all?
What if
it stands out? Yeah. What if they hate it? Or what if it just doesn't work? Or what if it's very distracting to what we've shot before? And, oh, well, we're going to do it. And all of those things still worked out. So that allowed me to trust those instincts a little bit more, but it's a little bit frightening too.
Did you have, I feel like if I was in that situation, this is like what you shouldn't do, but I'd probably try to like shoot it both ways and be like, let's get our Alexa VHS camera over here.
We're shooting a magic hour and we had this location for an hour. So it was like,
wait, you had the location for an hour?
Yeah. Yeah. And we had all these parents who are brand new, who are showing up, and all these kids. And I hadn't talked about this with anyone because we didn't have really any proper prep time. So it's just me shouting to everyone what we're going to do. Literally, it was a very intimidating experience of 60 people looking at me, just saying what we're going to do. Right. But like, at that point,
you thought you were going to shoot the scene one way, like we've been shooting the rest. Nope.
Yeah, and totally to the actors who didn't know what the hell they were doing.
And do you start it with like, so I had this idea that it would be cool. You're not giving them your thought process. You're just saying, okay, so this is what we're going to do.
There was no time. It was very hot. Everyone was very angry because it was so hot outside.
Yeah.
It was the dead of summer in North Hollywood.
Well, but do you pitch it to Andy and he's like, oh, that's cool.
Like Andy and I had talked about that before and he was all in. Okay. The one thing Andy pushed back on was, and it was very smart, was I wanted one of the extras who played one of these parents to shoot it to give it that bad quality.
Oh, sure.
And he was like,
DP's always
let me do it. And he was so right because we tried one take and it was literally, I don't think he kept turning it off accidentally. It was just the ground. So I'm like, okay, I'll let a pro do it.
I do want more of the, like, that's my move. I have two moves for like make it look real, like make it look like it's not operated well. And one is the run up into it. So you start on the ground and you run into it. And the other is see a little bit of the boom.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's how you make things look like they're shot by amateurs.
Yeah, that's. I think Andy's version of that was he shot a little bit of his knee in shorts.
Yeah, totally. Like just like the bad little, beginning. Yeah.
But he was so right about making sure that he operated it and made the choice, and he understood what we were going for.
Can I tell you what normal people do that we don't do? Is they go crazy with the zoom.
Yeah,
we're like always zooming in and out.
Yeah.
He went the right amount of. I mean, he was a professional.
Yeah,
you know, he was like an actor. You know,
sure. Yeah, yeah. It situation. Is acting in that
it
way.
It is.
Yeah.
That's what we tell the DPs.
So Sam, I want to come back to the idea that Pen 15's a fucking hit. Like it's a very cool show right now. Like obviously you've seen the tweets of like I saw Andy Richter tweeted it out as like being like celebrities. Probably people who are more famous than that have tweeted about it. Who you must know who's
all you want me to name drop?
Name drop.
I'm talking your Chrissy Teigen, your Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
I have a couple. There's so many. Like
I'm pushing you to do it for sure.
There's a couple that I won't name because they were. I don't even want to. I want it to be my secret. That have been very cool.
Barack Obama.
We can cut it out.
Waiting for Barack Obama to see it. That would be the best, right? There's been this amazing response, which was absolutely shocking to me. I thought no one would see the show.
Yeah. I want to know. So you've got a very buzzy show. It's the unpaid endorsement, unprompted of a previous episode. like a high powered producer, like scripted development.
Fiction and nonfiction.
Thank you. At Shondaland was like, oh, I'm obsessed with this show. Has it changed your life?
Yes, it has.
Yes.
It has changed my life because as hard as it was to make it, I can now walk around knowing that, like, first of all, we were very proud of the work because we brought it. Like, no matter if no one saw it or if it was got good reviews, we knew we brought it. We knew we brought it really hard. Everyone killed themselves, every actor, every department. So I had that, but now no one can take it away from me. No one can, like, I can always say I was involved in a show that broke through in some way, whether, no matter what happens. And frankly, I might never do anything that connects in the way that Pen 15 did. I might do stuff that I think is better, but I could very well never have anything that touches so many people at once. And so that's a really cool feeling. It's very strange.
But that's kind of, to me, it doesn't matter, again, if you do that, because I kind of feel like there's... This is an insane generalization, but I'm just going to say it out loud. Like, two types of filmmakers. There's the ones where you're like, yeah, I did this show. It's called Take My Wife. It was on CISO. Oh, that's like this NBC digital platform, but now it's on Stars. You can watch it, and it was on Netflix. Like, or there's the one that's like, I did Pen 15, and they're like, oh, I love that show.
Well, it's
or,
it's
or the, I've heard of it, or no, something. No.
It's
right?
It's a show called Test. You don't say right. It's a show called Friends. It's a show called Seinfeld. You say Seinfeld, right?
That's
this is
right.
I'm cribbing
also
this.
Did this is a Gene Epson. I created Seinfeld, by the way. I should also.
Yeah, yeah. Sam, you really bootstrapped though.
No, but there's like it doesn't matter if the next 10 things you do nobody sees. You could still still know.
That's right. I'm very very very. It's very nice, and then you know it's nice when you can kind of read your friends and if they like actually like it or if they're just being polite, which is what you do most of the time. And then you hear people you admire respond it, and you hear people from all over the world have a reaction, and that's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy and so thrilling and unexpected and just surreal.
Has it affected, I'm going to go straight for the jugular, has it affected your career?
Definitely.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I
you have two lemons in your fridge now, I hope.
I have a
new
a fridge
off-brand
full
sriracha.
It's a sriracha you haven't heard of.
It's literally called sriracha.
To be honest, I'm still dead broke. But in spirit, my friend, I'm rich.
But you're getting offered, right? Like Jacob.
Well, so
Perlin,
we
your manager who only takes Jewish clients apparently is calling you a lot.
Well, I set up two projects that are going to go as soon as I either Pen 15 season 2 goes or I have a show and a movie ready that I had been working on for a long time before Pen 15.
And when you say go, you mean like they're set up at a studio?
Yeah.
Like someone that will pay to have them.
Like one, a TV show that last week we sold.
Congrats.
That's
Mazel Tov.
And I guarantee that's a huge part of that was someone, you know, was like, I don't want to.
What's the next thing from the Pen 15 guys?
Yeah. Yeah. Are you allowed to tell us anything about it? What network?
No.
How much money?
Because,
where you're parking spot? Cast? Nothing?
That was a project I shot a teaser trailer for. I've always had success shooting something as a proof of concept.
Did you do that for Pen 15?
We did. Many years ago.
Oren is so stoked to hear that because...
Yeah, because all I do is plan on shooting proofs of concept.
He wants to shoot proofs of concept, and we just did 4 episodes with development executives. We're like, nah.
Who were like, nah?
Yeah.
Well... In this case, it worked.
Yeah. I believe the Zwiebelman method because it, yes, if you have Pen 15, you probably don't need to shoot another proof of concept to sell your next show. But if you don't,
it strengthened it. I still think that it helped tremendously from the feedback we got. But it was also something where I didn't just do it on the cheap. I made sure it was the production value is top notch. Mm-hmm. So
like the same value at production value as the show would actually have.
Maybe not quite that level.
What about cast?
cast. This is a project that I co-created again with another actress. Mm-hmm. I do that.
So the talent that you're presenting, the real actual talent. It's not
the one in this case. One.
Are you allowed to tell us the actress?
Her name is Tara Samuel, and she is a Canadian actress who I've worked with before. And I can't wait for everyone to discover that she's like the next Tilda Swinton, Frances McDormand. She's, you know, closer to middle age. She's older.
And how do you find these people? It's like
I'm friends with actors. I love actors. I go on Miss Connections? Is that what you said?
No, but do you? So you have actors that you're a fan of, and you say, "Hey, let's develop something collaborate. Together."
I guess so. Yeah, that was the case with Anna and Maya. We all were just hammered out a bunch of, you know, ideas till we landed on one that clicked, and that's kind of how it works.
So you like literally say like, "Hey, let's get together in a coffee shop and let's just like come up brainstorm ideas."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's that kind of fundamental.
So it's not coming from like, oh, I had an idea that's right for these two people.
No. No, it's just letting the idea fairy sprinkle her ideas on us.
So it's more about starts with the people.
Mm-hmm. People cool. I think are really talented who I want to work with.
Right.
And that's always been how I've gotten anything going, is shooting something with them and shooting it, you know, really well, because I think that people don't have an imagination for what it could be, what the potential of a project could look like. If it looks shoddy, they might think that that's what their show is going to be without some more money. So I, you know, that's another reason I've gone broke, is I've put so much on credit cards to amp up a proper project that I've gone broke on.
Sure.
To prove it.
Can we dig into that for a second?
Yes.
What to you is something that's shot well? Is the type of camera, the location, the size of the cast, color correction, what?
You know, it's trying to not make something 80%, but trying to make something 100%. And that means everything across the board. Now, I certainly can't afford all of that, like a sound mix and a proper color section, but I will go as far as I can before people are like pumping the brakes and being like, no mas, or you're not paying us enough. So I will...
But you'll get like permits and...
But it's all... Yeah.
All that stuff.
Well, locations, I've been stuck with like, you know, that's the one thing I can't afford. Stuff like that. Right. But I will edit myself, and so that makes it easier. And I'll know what I'm shooting. I'll know I've written it, and I'll be able to shoot it, and I'll be able to edit it.
And are you picking scenes that are within your budget, or are you like, well, you know what? I've got this football scene I really want to shoot.
I'm shooting within a within a reasonable budget for sure. You just try to push it in every way you can. And I think that's the thing that's paid off.
And are you trying to like show scope with these things too?
You're trying to show the world and the tone, and just make it kind of kick ass. Like for like the show that I just went out with, it's a minute long trailer. It's very short. It's very digestible. It's not a whole, they don't have to sit down for very long. It's got a good little song in it. Hopefully I'll be able to talk about that one soon, but you know, these things take so long.
Sure.
It's like,
Lawyers
and things. Stuff, I feel like they do one letter at a time and then send a pigeon out with the next letter. And it's
do you already have like your Facebook post ready to go? Like as soon as the news is public, like,
I've deleted like my obituary? Facebook. Facebook
too expensive.
Yeah, you have to get rid of something. It's too expensive. but yeah, I think that's been my strategy: is like go after things that I know I can do a great job with people that I think are great. And do it very well. And sometimes it takes a really long time. But now it's starting to bear some fruit. Mm-hmm. And it's either reinforcing my insanity and or it has nothing to do with what I shot. And it's, you know, it could be any number of reasons.
You know, it's funny because I think we had Carrie Gologoli on.
I mean, she said the same thing you're saying, which is a proof of concept 9 times out of 10 is a shitty version of your project.
Yeah.
So you're just saying, I try to just not make the shitty version.
Yeah.
Because if it did not turn out, I just would bury it and just choke the losses.
Right. So how, because I always have a hard time even like in smaller stakes circumstances where it's like, okay, I just shot this thing. Where do I put it on my website? Do I put it on my website or not? And I'm always sending it to Orin. I'm like, is this actually good? Like, I can't tell. And you have to be really hard on yourself. You have to be really honest with yourself.
I just
yourself
had like a pre-typed out email that says no. Actually, Gmail suggests it. Gmail
No, you should just pack it up. Just go find a house in
right.
Portland.
They should have like a Hollywood version of Gmail suggestions.
How is it just your own internal barometer in terms of...
In terms of if it's good?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really... Yeah, I suppose it's instinct. I just really believe in the person I'm working with, talent, and I just won't stop until it's good. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't do a lot. I don't do a lot of stuff. I don't shoot a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't take on a lot of. I don't do these. I don't have enough for a website. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have a massive amount of footage.
Mm-hmm.
I just really hone in on exactly the project I want to do and like relentlessly chase it.
Yeah. You know, I think maybe we talked about this with Andy on his episode actually, but you guys have a thing you call bold choices. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on when you think of
that's
kind of your guiding philosophy, right? In terms of,
I mean, that's an Andy phrase. Sure. But it's nice to bold choices. It just means, you know, Andy talks a lot about how there's so much stuff out there, 600 shows at once, that many movies, whatever. How do you stand out?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you make something just feel different? That's what I want to do as an artist, is do something that hasn't been seen. And B, that's, I feel, you kind of almost have to trust that that's people, what people want.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of that is like, yeah, you can take the anecdote about shooting on VHS tape.
Mm-hmm.
That's a choice. Maybe it's, I don't know. That doesn't sound very bold. I mean,
sure, but it is, but not, it's just standard making coverage.
It's right? Not standard coverage. Standard coverage. You know, in Pen 15, there's so much that happens at Anna and Maya's locker. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're shooting, the 10th episode at a locker. And how many ways can you shoot two people in front of a locker?
Five.
And it's five. That's right. And so I was like, man, there's gotta be a sixth. And,
inside the locker. Didn't think about that.
And it's inside, and it's Andy getting inside of a locker,
yeah.
Stuffing him inside a locker. I'll just be craving, like I'll be dying inside if I have to shoot it the same way. What if Maya opens her locker and we're on a close up of her on her mirror and she's singing to herself to start the scene. And so we'll do it that way, you know, just to, even if that doesn't land in the scene, to kind of get the creative juices going, mm-hmm. and feel like we're at least trying to do something different. And it's nice to have someone who's one of your main collaborators who's pushing for that, mm-hmm. you know.
Can I ask, when you are in your brainstorming stage and you don't want to shoot a locker in the normal way, like the boring way, do you watch other stuff? Do you try to reference things? Do you get inspired by other locker scenes?
In that case, it was just improvised in the moment. I was just like, ugh. You know, we're almost done with this shoot. Really, are we going to do it like this? And we came up with that on the spot. And then I have a lot of, like, I rewatch the same movies over and over in my life. So Andy is used to me sending him lots of clips of Martin Scorsese movies or, you know, like the same, like, he knows my taste, and I'll just send him videos. And we'll just try to do what they did. We'll just steal. But when it's done in a different location with different actors, it suddenly becomes fresh feeling.
Right. Or it's like a comedy now, even though it was...
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
It's a Scorsese film.
Yeah. So I'm just stealing, but it feels different because it's within a different form.
Yeah. I heard they're going to make that illegal soon, so...
Yeah. Well, I'm out of... You know, I'm screwed because all I do is lift.
Yeah.
A lot of Goodfellas shots.
There, I can't tell you how many there are. I'm not joking. Yeah. Like, no one would know that, you know, our ninth episode is completely inspired by the work of Ozu, mm-hmm. you know, so we're putting...
Is Ozu one of your guys?
He's not, but... But there is a film of his that reminded me of the plot of one of our episodes that no one would ever pick up on. And so, but it's just a little something for Andy and I to like latch onto and give it a feel.
So you're just like two camera heights and that's it.
Yeah. It's a low, you know, it's like on the camera on the floor.
Yes. Yeah, seated and standing, right?
Mats. And I don't even know if he does the standing thing, but it's a certain size of like a medium shots that I would be constantly looking for and be like, I know we've shot every other episode this way, but this episode is the Ozu way.
Yeah.
We call it the low zoo. Let's get the low zoo shot, you know.
You know you didn't go to film school when you have no idea who Ozu is.
I thought
it was a sauce.
It does not matter. Yeah, no one's ever going to know or care. It's just fun. It just gets you through the day. Maybe it gives you something different.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, you know, Matt and I do a lot of commercials and a lot of work on a lot of things that we feel like we don't love the script or we're limited in some way.
We have, I think, I don't want to speak for you, Oren, but I have the problem of like, well, I'll make it good.
Yeah. Or I'll do the best version of this.
Oh, I'm sure I'd be the same. Yeah, for sure.
But how long was it between film school and Take My Wife?
Probably close to 10 years. I had made other stuff that had gotten me going and got me attention and gotten me like a development deal.
My Wife didn't fall in your lap.
Yeah, I had made a web show to get me that job. That was
what was that?
Got passed around, and that was a show that again Andy shot, and it was called Little Things, and it was a really breakthrough project for me. Again, it was created by two actor friends of mine who were a couple at the time, and it was a show about their relationship, and each episode showed a different part of what it's like to be in a long-term relationship, but they were a minute long, and I thought that was brilliant. Just to do very short things.
Little slice of life.
Yes. I had written and helped make indie features, and it was very hard to get people to watch that. But what was super easy to get people to watch is something that's a minute long. And that was, I just thought that was such a great idea. And we could do it really well because you didn't need, I couldn't really milk that and make everything look pretty good. And made really well. And so people would watch that, and that got a lot of attention.
But just to clarify, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Little Things went what I call Hollywood viral. It did not go...
Well, it's never been seen, and the reason is because the couple who wrote it are no longer together, and so they...
They've had a falling out.
They vetoed it.
So that's incredible. So you got, essentially you got zero views.
Zero views, for sure. No one knows about it. No one will ever see it. And it's very sad because I'm very proud of it.
Then I don't know why it sounded like I've seen it before.
But yeah, it got passed around just as examples of all of our collective work. Mm-hmm. And we got
reps
offers to make it as a half hour and kind of went through that process. But because... these two people are so dear to me, they broke up. And so that project kind of like, even though I've done kind of bigger projects, I adore that one, but it won't be seen ever.
But just to kind of clarify, like, it's not important that thousands of people or millions of people saw it. It's
just
the right people. The right 200 people saw it, right?
It's very true. I guess you don't need, I've never had anything go viral or seen even 1,000 times probably outside of Pen 15.
Yeah. I don't know.
sure, 1,000 people had CISO.
When there was that bubble going, my party trick was like, okay, everyone here is making their living off of Go90, CISO, et cetera.
That's right.
And I would be like, how many of you are paying subscribers for any of those? And no one would raise their hand except for CISO. CISO was the one thing. Look, it's a self-selecting group of comedy nerds, but like CISO was the one I had a few friends who paid for. I paid for CISO.
Well, I did not. And it was a great opportunity, and it was very hard to do. But yeah, I guess you need the right people. Yeah.
Go 90 was free, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
Fair enough. Yeah, Go 90 was a whole, like, that was a whole industry, you know?
Yeah. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Let's pour one out.
Well, I guess what I was getting, what I'm kind of getting at in a roundabout way is that
10 years of
yeah, 10 years, and you have things that kind of
questioning you, and
broke through to Hollywood, and you got people are interested in you, but your grandma is still saying, like, I looked in the entertainment section of the newspaper, and there's nothing about you.
Yeah, you talked to my grandma as research before this.
Our grandmas say that.
It's you have people who are doubting you in your own family, and people think you're crazy, and you think you're crazy, and
so how do you keep going? And not take like a development job or go try to write more studio films or chase that, like the money stuff where you're like, it might not be my dream, but at least I know I'm good at it and I can do it.
I think I whatever reason, I just was not going to give up. And I always felt, so I could make money from editing. I did edit as a source of income, mm-hmm. and it was a great training for directing. So I could always do that.
Wait, did you edit stuff you didn't like?
Oh, everything.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Everything. That integrity diet was like driving me nuts.
Everything. No integrity. But yeah, I was a waiter. I was an editor.
I didn't know you were a waiter.
Oh, yeah.
Where did you wait?
The funniest place I was a server was a place called Islands. So yeah.
So that, you had some survival jobs.
I had to live off something, of course.
Right.
But when it came to like writing or directing, I was very precious. I just did not want to do too much. I just had it in my mind. I only wanted to do things that I could do a great job with.
Yeah. And you never wanted to be like staffed on a TV show or anything like that?
No, never. It's not that I'm like, I could, I just don't know. I don't trust that I would know how to do that. Like, I just don't know how.
Well, let me ask actually about Pen 15, right? So you are a co-creator. You directed the last four episodes. Were you in the room? Like how did.
Yeah. So it was the room was, myself and my co-creators, Anna Conkle and Maya Erskine. And we had one other kind of more experienced writer named Gabe Liedman, mm-hmm. and he had come from Broad City and Transparent, and he was a really great
stand-up as well,
and a great stand-up. So he was kind of our experienced guy, but did you find him, or did Hulu?
We
interviewed a handful of people, read his script, really liked it, met him, and thought he was just kind of the perfect chemistry person for us, and he was. And so it was just us four in a room with a writer's assistant. And we wrote them all, you know, we didn't have a classical room. Mm-hmm. We didn't have enough money to do that.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it is an awesomeness show, right? I think there's a little bit of
awesomeness is the production company?
Well, yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Like, their budgets are low, right?
Yes,
like, they're very low. It's easy to look back now and be like, this show is incredible, and look at the billboards and all the buzz and stuff. But like, you guys didn't know that it was going to be a thing.
No, it was really, really the bare minimum money. It was just us three, us four in the writer's room. We had some friends write a couple scripts for us, including our writer's assistant. So yeah, very small team, wrote for 12 weeks, shot for 8 weeks, edited, you know, this all at this time last year.
And how many episodes?
There's 10 episodes. So this time last year, we started the writer's room, almost a year to date. Didn't have one break, one week off from writing to prep to shooting to post. And you're talking about two creators who are also the stars who are in like every scene. Mm-hmm. And it definitely broke us. And luckily we are all best friends or else we would have...
Called each other.
Yeah, I would be in prison for murder right now.
And are you editing? You're not editing yourself. You're working.
I am not
editors.
Physically touching it. No, we had editors, but we're in. You know, it's literally Anna, Maya, and I sharing a blanket on a very small couch in a dark room at 3 a.m. at Awesomeness with our editor every single night.
And the blanket is because they can't afford heat.
Because it's cold, and they would leak. There was leaks from the ceiling. It was a very bad.
It still sounds glamorous to me.
Yeah, I'm almost at the point where it sounds you know, it does romantic, sound glamorous like and romantic. Capital R romantic.
Like a lemon in the fridge.
How did you get the show? Like, how did you sell the show?
I'm trying to find the most interesting way to say it, but the bottom line, because it took so many twists and turns, we came up with the show idea about 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
We found a producer in the Lonely Island.
Oh, right. I was going to ask about that,
too. Who at the time had a deal to finance these pilot presentations.
And when you say in the Lonely Island, is it one of the three Lonely Island guys?
They have a company called Party Over Here, and their executive, his name is Billy Rosenberg. I don't know if you know Billy, but Billy was the head of Party Over Here, believed in, well, you know, even before that, I think it came before him, to be honest.
And how did you first get introduced to those people? How did you get introduced
to Party Over Here? It was one of my co-creators, Anna, her manager, was kind of pitching them projects. From what I know, and I actually don't know the full story, but they just kind of laid out a bunch of their projects, and someone very smart was like, that one sounds interesting. They gave us money to shoot, and that was 5 years ago, and we shot a thing.
And is the conceit of them playing 13-year-olds in the logline?
Yes. Yes. It was always that. It was always that they were going to play middle schoolers surrounded by other real 13-year-olds. But then we shot the proof of concept, which further showed, okay, this isn't a sketch. This isn't Jemé. This isn't White Hat American Summer. This is like Dawson's Creek, except we're aware that they're not really 13.
And like rated R.
And rated R, right. And so shot that, pitched it to everyone. Hulu was interested. They ordered scripts.
And when you say pitch it to everyone, Lonely Island takes you around to pitch to everyone.
They weren't like in the room with us. Like it was just the three of us. Me and Maya again, going around and pitching it. People had seen the pilot presentation.
Had Take My Wife come out since
then? No. This was well before, 4 years ago.
Yeah. I had Little Things.
I hadn't even shot Little Things. Oh. This was that this long ago. This is how long things take sometimes. So we made it, Hulu bought it, then years passed where we all take jobs and Hulu is, people are changing jobs. Something about studios fighting over who owns it.
Regime changes.
Wait, Hulu bought it like 7 years ago?
They bought it probably 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
3 years ago. It cut to like a year of lawyers working out contracts, all of us having to take other jobs. Or not having to, getting other opportunities, being lawyers fighting, business affairs, people fighting over who owns the project or how much everyone would get. And then we got a call that Billy Rosenberg, who is our producer, is now the head of comedy at Hulu, which is kind of this amazing coup of him selling the show to himself. So he said, okay, let's go. We're going to go do this. We wrote a couple episodes. That was our deal.
That makes so much more
sense.
And
then they're like, okay, now you can go straight to series based on these two scripts.
Can I ask a really dumb question? Like, how are you so good at writing comedy half-hour TV shows?
How am I?
You, the three of you.
I don't have an answer to that. I mean, that's... Have you done a ton of it? No, I mean, we had a lot of... We were just so inspired. We didn't know. You know, how to do it. You know, our drafts would be too long. You know, they'd be like 30, 40 pages and trying to stuff that into a half hour, plus them improvising a lot, which is a huge part of the writing. I had been writing my whole, all up until then, you know.
Mostly comedy?
But no, comedy, drama, dramedy.
I always call it comma.
So I had been writing, you know, TV was new for me because I had mostly written features thinking I wanted to be a feature film director. And you get notes and you get feedback. And so I don't know if I wouldn't know how to answer that. I don't know if I'm good at it, but
practice, right?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, years and years and years and getting other good people involved and their brain on it too.
Right. You know? Yeah. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at is like that. It's not just that you got lucky and you sold this thing to Hulu and then the person that helped you.
Like, I had written 15 feature films over that 10 years, like grinding away at scripts and lots of bad ones. And you know, I've been nonstop. I've always been writing just because no one had seen it or read it or it had been made. I had been working
even though
so
they were
hard.
Features, like it kind of.
Yeah, you're still telling a story and you have characters. And I've been working so hard at trying to get better at writing through that time. And so it feels like it's out of nowhere. But to me, I'm like, man, I've been cranking it out and grinding for 15 years.
And your co-creators also have been writing forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So then it went.
I mean, that is a real stroke of luck, right? Because
Well, except it took 7 years. Like, I mean, it's not like
it is and it isn't
hard work. Right?
A lot of people didn't get it. It's a stroke of luck that
no. That the person that believes in your project all of a sudden becomes the head.
Right? Yeah. That's major luck. I think about there's so many moments of luck throughout the way that made it happen. I hope nothing ever takes that long to get going, because that's interminable. Yeah. But yeah, there's so much luck involved. Yeah.
Well, the good news is you had a couple shows in between then, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that your experience on Take My Wife informed Pen 15 in a huge way.
Yeah, definitely. Changed enormously.
So can you tell us a little bit about, you've made it all the way through Pen 15. Is there anything, are there any takeaways that you can impart on our listeners? People who are like, I want to make my own show. You know, we've learned a lot, obviously, but like, are there any like little nuggets? This is the Oren question always.
Yeah, I mean, I believe in working with good actors and shooting stuff that's good. I think that only because that's worked for me. And I just think like, find people you really believe in and just kill yourself for them. And that's been what I've done and that's worked out. So that's a little nug.
That's
and a then get right. Andy to shoot your project.
Yeah,
of course.
Ooh, that's the secret.
Yeah,
we but have great actors do so much. Like, as a writer, I'm sure you know, or a director, you go in and you're like pitching and you just like want to die because it sounds so boring to you. But if you get an actor to do it and they can make them, make people laugh and put on a story, like work with great actors.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty smart.
It's makes
cast it, your pitch.
Yeah.
You know, there's two other podcasts that we listen to about filmmaking, Respect the Process, and Making Movies is Hard. And at the end of each episode on Respect the Process, like, Jordan asks, what does Respect the Process mean to you? And then on Making Movies is Hard, I think Ulrich asks, like, is making movies hard? but our podcast, we just ask people, like, give us a tip. And it always ends up being some form of the name of our podcast. So I feel like it's like, it's like the more sophisticated end question.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Sam, this was incredible. We could talk to you for another 6 hours.
Ah, you guys are great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
So nice.
Hey, it's
great.
Not over yet. We still have one more segment.
One more segment. Will you stick around and endorse with us, Sam?
Yeah.
Unpaid endorsements. All right. Oren, you got anything?
Oh, I do. I have the best endorsement I've ever found, and it's probably only I care about it. But... sorry, I used to endorse like Adobe products like every episode 100 years ago, like when we first started this podcast, because I just like love the Creative Cloud Suite. What did you guys edit Pen 15 in?
Avid. That was what Awesomeness had. So it was okay.
What, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Do you use Premiere too?
I was a Final Cut Pro 7 diehard, and now that is like obsolete on new systems. And so I sort of quit editing.
Perfect.
How'd you do your proof of concept?
That was Final Cut 7 when I still use it.
Even the show you just sold?
Yeah, because I had shot that and edited it right before Pen 15 started. So in the window when I could use Final Cut.
It was still usable.
It was still usable. And right after it was over, I can't even open it on my computer.
Devastating. Work.
And I just kind of don't want to learn a whole new software, although I heard it's like kind of easy if you know Final Cut.
Yeah, Premiere.
You could pick it up.
Avid. Sure. I don't think
I'm
as
lazy.
Easy.
Yeah.
But so this thing has been happening to me lately, where I'm editing in Premiere, and then just like that spinning beach ball or rainbow of death or whatever you want to call it comes up, and I wait like 20 minutes, and it's still spinning, and I look like when my last autosave was, and it was like 20 minutes before this. I've lost all this work. And I just like get depressed for a few minutes, and then I just like force quit, and then I restart, and I just, you know, lost 20 minutes worth. So today, for some reason, I was like, Googled how to autosave if Premiere crashed or if Premiere is hanging or something. I forget what I typed, but we'll put it in the show notes. And then this guy posted a video that like had the answer.
Oh.
And I tried it and it totally worked. It's like, this is going to be a very technical answer, but if you're in Premiere on a Mac and you get the beach ball and your computer's stuck, you go to you launch Activity Monitor, you know, it shows all the programs you're running. And one of the columns it shows you is called PID, the process ID. And you look for the process ID of Adobe Premiere. And then you go to the terminal, you know, and you type in sudo, S-U-D-O, space, dash, kill, space, dash, all caps, S-E-V-G. And this is all meaningless, but I'm just telling you so you don't have to look it up yourself. And then space and dash and the process ID.
I'm just impressed that you've memorized this.
Well, because yeah, it's
a lot
like
to memorize.
Well, everyone knows sudo and kill, right? Sudo kill. That's how you kill. Sudo means like.
Yeah, Sam, you know it, right? I definitely sure. know that. Sure.
So the sudo command everyone. Basically is just saying this is like an admin level command, like only an administrator on this computer can do it, which doesn't mean much on our personal computers, but like on a big mainframe or something, it would mean something. And then kill is like you're killing a process. And I don't know what SEVG does, but I think it has something to do with like the type of thread, whatever. That doesn't matter. But it basically will force Premiere to autosave your project and then it crashes. And then
force quits out, basically.
Yeah. And then when you load it, you have your autosave. And it's like you didn't lose anything.
I mean, that's actually amazing.
And like, it, even yeah. If,
I mean, God bless those people who
make a YouTube videos.
Like that's seriously. So, and or say it on a podcast, like that's amazing. Cause that's a devastating feeling.
I mean, even 7 minutes, you know, when you're in the flow and you're like, oh, and this, and this sound, and this, ooh, this is, and so I don't know, it just made me so happy. Huge. And I was like, I'm going to mention this today. So, I mean, obviously you don't need to listen to this. You can just Google like Premiere hanging, you know, and then you'll probably find this video.
Pretty killer.
Yeah. Anyway, huge. What about you guys?
Sam, you got something?
What, an Uzo movie?
I... just,
sorry, I'm just being a jerk.
I don't know if I'm giving up any high-level secrets, but Andy and I do a thing, and I'm wondering.
By the way, we want high-level secrets.
This is super high-level, and I'm curious if he's brought it to one of your sets.
He's mostly sleeping.
But we have something called a PLC on set, and a PLC stands for post-lunch coffee.
Oh, sure.
And so we'll do a post-lunch coffee, but then we've evolved to what's called a PLC hot slammer, which is essentially when you don't have any time or it could be really hot outside and you essentially just down a hot cup of coffee as fast as possible together. And
you have to do it together?
You have to do it together, or
like
you
kind
should,
of a coffee
or at least
bong or something?
I want to, you know, you get the...
Sure, it's the ritual of it.
It's the ritual, that's right. It's the camaraderie.
Hot slammer.
It's called a PLC hot slammer. Sure. And occasionally what I'll also do is if the catering has horchata, I will add horchata to my coffee.
What kind of catering do you have that they happen to have horchata? You're talking about the drink.
Yes, Pen 15 had some horchata and I'd add it to my PLC and do a PLC hot slammer with Andy. And that's how you shoot incredible stuff.
Now, to our listeners that don't drink coffee, is there a substitute?
You start drinking coffee.
Yeah. That's
good. Get your life together.
I don't know how people work on sets, work 12-hour days plus commute times, and don't drink coffee.
I mean, there's Red Bulls, I guess.
Cocaine as well will do the trick.
I think that's gone out of style.
You know, I have a... It's not a PLC hot slammer, but if you can get espresso on set, or if you can get like cold brew... and you want to cut it with something, I will throw it into a lemon LaCroix sometimes.
Whoa. Oh, that's disgusting.
I know that people find it disgusting. Wild. I get razzed for it sometimes, but sparkling water is incredible with coffee. No duh.
I forgot about you.
And a lemon twist is also great.
This is high level.
Yeah. So if you're at a horchata, throw an espresso shot into it.
Try it.
Because you're also trying to just like make it so that you don't scald your throat, right? But I'll sip it all day.
It's the taste.
Yeah.
If it scalds, even better. You know,
it reminds you of the coffee the entire afternoon. Yeah.
It's just like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
See, I feel like there's two tips we give listeners. Number one is move to LA, obviously. And number two is drink coffee. I feel like, and yeah, if you counted the really tallied, how many tips we give, what tips we give.
No joke.
Maybe that top two.
We just did. We should have mentioned at the top of the podcast, but we just both contributed to a No Film School article where you like leave, you give tips like, oh, there's some top level directing tips. And mine is drink coffee on the way to set.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like before you get to set, yeah, because then you're ready to go.
Yeah. That's so good.
Well, my unpaid endorsement, do you guys know Letterboxd? Have you seen
this? Yes, I do. Is that the film?
It's a film social network.
Yes.
And I'm having a good time with it. It's real fun. It's basically just like, it's like Facebook, but you're only like looking at the movies that you're basically tracking movies that you watch. You can go back and like add all of the movies that you've, you know, watched your entire life, or it can be from this point forward. And there's fun ways to kind of sort it, like, oh, how many movies have I watched this year and from what eras and all that stuff. And then also people post reviews. And so it's just like a fun way to keep track of what you're watching, which is always kind of pleasurable. And also hopefully, I'm hoping that it will motivate me towards watching more movies, because I think that we're, as a culture, kind of shifting into watching TV, which is also great. No offense, Sam, or us.
None taken. I'm a film guy.
You're a film guy, yeah. But so like,
don't watch my show.
I want to go back into...
I only watch commercials.
So Letterboxd, no E at the end. Letterbox with a D. Well, Sam, how can listeners find out more about you? Where can they keep track of you?
Well, I suppose, you know, I'm on Instagram. You can look up my name, Watch Pen15 on Hulu. That's me, you know, more me than anything.
We'll update listeners as your stuff comes out, Sam. It was so great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, very much.
If you want to learn more about the show and the things that we talked about, you can go to justshootitpod.com. We'll have all the show notes there. You can follow the show across all social media. You can see pictures of this podcasting setup even. And we're doing a better job of interacting with you guys, kind of like dropping questions, learning more about what you want and what you like to hear. And you can follow me at Mr. Madden, though.
And I'm on Twitter at Smitey Pileg and on Instagram at O'Kaplan.
O'Kaplan, my Kaplan. This episode was edited by Jay McAuliffe, produced by Madeline Reswat. Our webmaster is Ewan Williams. And the music you're listening to right now is by the artist Jazar, provided by the Free Music Archive.
Leave us an iTunes review if you get a chance. We appreciate it. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.